This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. For many islands, their social, economic, and environmental well-being is tied strongly to the fate of a single sector, tourism. But badly planned tourism risks depleting biodiversity, degrading land, and polluting the seas. So using Tioman Island as a case study, Reef Check Malaysia, the local chapter of the world's largest international coral reef monitoring program, released a paper titled Tioman as a Sustainable Tourism Destination. And joining me now to shed more light on this paper and its findings is Julian Hyde, the General Manager of Reef Check Malaysia. Welcome, Julian. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good to have you back on the show. I can imagine these movement control orders have not been the easiest on individuals such as yourself who enjoy diving.
No, we haven't been able to get out in the field for way too long now, but hopefully soon, hopefully soon.
Yes, and there is, of course, a huge focus on domestic tourism now, you know, since it has been allowed under the recovery MCO. And I suspect, you know, many would be interested to head to islands for holidays. But we're going to get into that a bit later. But how are things going at Reef Check? You know, how have the various, variations of this movement control order impacted your work?
Well, most of our staff are actually based out in field offices. There's only two, three people here in KL in the office. So we have a team of four on Tioman, for example. They have not been able to dive, and given restrictions on, you know, social distancing and so on, normal office activities have been curtailed. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the whole island community has been sitting in its houses, you know, while all of this goes on. Mm. And we've been able to have a certain amount of interaction. So some of the conversations have been ongoing. We have been able to continue to talk to people, even if just on an individual basis, about programs that we are trying to develop or the things that we're trying to do on the islands. So just as a way of example, on Mantanani Island in Sabah, we are continuing to manage the waste system on the island. So we're going round on a daily basis with all of the necessary PPE. But my guys are still collecting and segregating trash on the island. So that's ongoing. And while we're doing that, we can carry on talking to the local islanders about other issues as well. Tioman, similarly, our team there has been working with the local community to talk about setting up some sort of a co-management system on the island. And again, some of that is done by individual calls. Some of it is done by small gatherings. Obviously, we're very cautious about following the rules and regulations and looking after people's safety. But nonetheless, you can still have conversations with people. So much of what we do has actually been able to continue. Where we haven't been able to do any work is in surveys. We haven't been able to travel to the islands. And that's been a shame because one of our big volunteer programs uses volunteer divers to help us to conduct surveys. And a lot of people have missed out on their trips this year. So for that, we apologize, but there's not much we can do about it. And hopefully we'll be able to get those surveys back on track either later this year or next year. So some good, some bad, but we have been able to continue pretty much with a full program.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, your partners in the islands as well, they've been coping as well. You know, a lot of course, tourism was severely impacted by all of this. So, I mean, have they been able to cope with the situation as such?
Well, it's got to be tough. I haven't actually been out to the islands, but I have spoken with my colleagues on the islands several times. And, you know, an island like Tioman with, 40 dive operators and 70-plus resorts, and a population of only 3,700. So they're sitting waiting. They are sitting desperately waiting for the tourists to come back because without that, there's no livelihoods. I just heard first divers arriving into islands in Sabah in the last weekend. So Pulau Sipadan, Pulau Mabul around Simporna area in the south, and in the north on the west coast as well, there have been a small number of divers getting out. And I think it will start to open up in Peninsula soon, but it's been a tough year for them. It's been really
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, all across the world, and you know, yeah, like you said, you know, with the smaller islands as well, who are heavily reliant on it, it's a very big problem. But I mean, that's something that we want to talk about, you know, sustainable tourism as well. And like I mentioned earlier, Reef Check recently released a paper titled "Tioman as a Sustainable Tourism Destination." But before we dig into that, just for some context, I know that Reef Check initiated its first community program, the Cintai Tioman campaign in Tioman, back in 2014. Can you just give us some background on that?
Yeah, we've had a relationship with the island for many, many years. As you know, I used to live there, running a dive center. And then when I started working with Reef Check, we were still doing surveys there. But because we knew the community, we felt that there was a bigger conversation we could be having than just doing coral reef surveys. And so we started talking to them, and you start to identify issues like the effectiveness of marine management and how well the different stakeholders are speaking together. And we decided that we could make a contribution by trying to get the different stakeholders talking to each other better. And that was what Cintai Tioman was all about. It was a way to say the dive operators and the resort operators and the local communities and the businesses and the shops and the government agencies should be having a better conversation if they're going to manage the island and its resources together in a more coordinated manner. So that's where that started. And we set up what we call the Tioman Marine Conservation Group, which is a bunch of local guys who we trained up essentially to work alongside the marine parks officers, because they can't do everything. They can't be everywhere all of the time. So we were doing things like removing ghost nets from the reefs. We were doing crown of thorns, which is a coral predator, crown of thorns removal programs. We were doing mooring buoy maintenance and so on, working with the snorkeling guides. So they were able to start to take on some of the stuff that would traditionally be done by marine parks, funded by external funders. And the way that has evolved, quite interestingly, is that at the end of last year, the Department of Fisheries introduced a program called Reef Care. And Reef Care is a way to give a little bit more responsibility to local communities for managing coral reefs in their area. We were one of the nominated partners on Tioman. So we've got this bit of the island to look after, a beach and the reefs nearby. And this is where we're now setting up the co-management committee to get the Tioman Marine Conservation Group, the local guys, more directly hands-on involved in managing that area. What does it mean? We're not quite sure yet. What does managing mean? We're not quite sure yet. But this is one of the things that Alvin has been able to continue doing while the MCO has been on, is having these individual conversations with people and say, what can we do? What do you want to do? How do you want to be involved? What sort of programs should we be implementing? Who's responsible? What's the structure going to be? So all of that has been ongoing, which is great, because it's been a great gap in all of the day-to-day stuff which distracts us from conversations like that. Yeah. So, well, we might as well have that conversation then, because there's nothing else to do. So it's an interesting situation we find ourselves in. But it has allowed us to make this big step forward on Tioman with building local participation. And, of course, the tourism stakeholders are an important part of that, because they are taking people out in the water, they're taking people diving and so on. So they must be making a contribution to the sustainability of tourism on the island.
Yeah, because of course, you know, tourism impacts key ecosystems, right? Because that's the focus of the activities. You know, it's often concentrated on these most sensitive sites, like, you know, the reefs, the beaches, the unique ecosystem. So is it safe to say that the effects of tourism are disproportionately concentrated on these sites and, you know, really dependent on them being sustained?
Yes, the islands attract conservatively 500,000 tourists a year. And they're not sitting on the top of the mountain in the middle of the island. They're all on the beaches.
Yes.
So you're seeing increasing encroachment onto beaches by developments. You're seeing increasing numbers of tourists in the water. Don't get me wrong. I'm not bashing the tourism industry here. It's a big chunk of our GDP. It's a huge employer. But, you know, sometimes you just got to step back and say, are we doing this the right way? Are we doing it in a way which is sympathetic to not only the environment, but the local communities who live there? I remember years ago when I lived on Tioman, one of the locals saying, well, it's all right for you lot, but if your business fails, you can just leave and go somewhere else. Mm. We'll be stuck here.
That's right.
That's the way they live. You know, it's like, how do you want a bunch of people traipsing through your own living room at home and having to look around and looking under the table and saying and commenting on it? That's how some of the islanders feel sometimes. Yes, they benefit from it. Yes, they get jobs. But sometimes you should go there during monsoon, for example. The atmosphere is totally different. because there's no tourists. Mm-hmm. So the locals are relaxed, they're happy, they're chatting with each other. It's wonderful. But, you know, there's the balance, right? The balance between the social impacts, the environmental impacts. And yeah, coastal ecosystems are fragile, coral reefs are fragile, mangroves and so on. So we need to be asking ourselves whether or not we are treating them with respect and getting the most out of them in the long term.
You know, many argue, of course, that tourism will create jobs for the local people, right? That's, I think, one of the most common arguments used in favour of developing further, you know, infrastructure in islands, for example. And I'm sure that's also the case that's being put forth in Tioman as well.
Mm, it is. And it is an interesting one because tourism does create jobs, but it's not necessarily for the local population. There is pretty much full employment on Tioman. People who want to work can work. They're either working in a family resort, in a family business, they're working in the transport sector, but pretty much everybody that wants one's got a job. If you build new resorts, there are not enough workers on the island to fill those positions because they've all got jobs already.
Right.
So you have to import workers. So yeah, it creates jobs, but not necessarily for the islanders.
Am I correct in saying that ReefCheck conducted a survey on Tioman to get feedback from islanders, you know, regarding major development on the island? Did you guys do that?
We've done a couple, but the most recent one was done together with the Nottingham University.
And, you know, what were some of the general responses from that survey?
Yeah.
You know, what were the main concerns?
Well, there is an understanding amongst the local population of the importance of tourism. They get it. But when you start to talk about new big infrastructure, many people are against it. And part of the reason for that is because the current infrastructure barely meets the needs of the existing population and the tourism industry. There are increasingly frequent power cuts. There are problems with water supply during the dry season. I recall a colleague on the islands, I think 2 years ago when they had a bit of a drought, there was no water for 4 or 5 weeks. And you imagine you're a family, come from the mainland or from overseas, you go to this beautiful island, you can't have a shower, you can't flush the toilet. You've been in the sea, you've been in the sun, you're sticky, you're sandy, you're salty, you want a shower. Sorry, got no water. It's not a great, you know, it's not a great image, is it?
No.
Apart from anything else. So a lot of the locals question whether or not we should be looking at building up the infrastructure just for what we have now. Never mind building big new infrastructure, building big new resorts and putting more pressure on that limited infrastructure. That was quite a strong feeling that came out of the survey.
From, you know, the folks living there themselves, you know, who, like you said, are there monsoon season, you know, when it's at its peak and when it's at its not. So it really, really impacts them. And I guess, you know, there's a growing niche tourism, right, which stresses clean, green experiences. I mean, what would that truly look like? You know, what would constitute a sustainable holiday, especially to an island like Tioman?
Let me use the example of Mantanani, actually, because in terms of numbers, it's a better example. When we started going to Mantanani to look at what was happening there 7, 8 years ago, there were maybe 50-day tourists going there every day. By the end of last year, that had got up to as many as 3,000 people a day. 50 up to 3,000 per day visiting the island. That is not sustainable. Those people are going out and doing snorkeling trips. They're doing dive trips. I'm not saying they're doing it deliberately, but that number of people is going to have an impact on the ecosystems, right?
Mm.
So let's move back to Tioman. Tioman gets between 250 and 300,000 visitors a year. We in Malaysia have our strategy on tourism seems to be to go mass market tourism.
Yeah.
I've heard people say that we get a lot of tourists, but the value per tourist is not very high. So here's a thought. How about we look at producing a higher value product and we go for a lower volume market? So instead of having 250,000 tourists on Tioman, we make it 125,000, but we provide them with a higher level of service and a better product of what they're looking for. And therefore, the value remains the same, but the impact is halved. I think there's a consensus amongst some tourism experts that we've spoken to in the last few months that tourism post-COVID is going to look very, very different from what it looks today.
Mm.
Mass tourism is not going to recover. People are looking at small-scale tourism. They don't want to be surrounded by lots of people because it's not safe. They are increasingly looking at local authentic, what they say, authentic experiences. Mm-hmm. So they want to go to an unspoiled island. You know, they want to go and see a little village and participate in its life or see its life a little bit. Homestays, for example, if they're well run, could become quite an important product in the future because it gives people a, you know, a real feel for the village experience. Or maybe a nice chalet attached to a homestay. I don't know, but there are, the market is changing. It's going small volume. It's going small groups. And it's going to be people, initially people who can travel, are going to have some money. So why don't we think about developing our tourism to suit that market instead of trying to chase after a market that no longer exists, i.e. the mass market?
Yeah. I think the argument is, you know, should we be investing in these sort of large-scale tourism infrastructures in this current environment, right? That's essentially what you're saying.
Yeah, well, that's part of it, yes. I mean, the argument about sustainable tourism is, you know, do we want sustainable tourism in the first place? Yes, we do. Okay, what does it need to look like? It needs to look small scale. And therefore, we don't need big new infrastructure. And by the way, that big new infrastructure runs in the face of current concerns on biodiversity conservation. So, you know, any big new infrastructure projects on an island like this is going to have an impact on both marine and terrestrial ecosystems. Well, there are various programs, the Convention on Biodiversity, the Aichi targets, our own national policy on biodiversity says we should not be doing that at the moment. So we have this opportunity to develop a new tourism, which is much more sensitive to the needs of the tourist and the environment and the local communities that are involved in providing the service.
I guess the question, of course, is how can we actually achieve those levels of sustainability in tourism development, which, you know, has long-term benefits to both the investor and also, you know, local stakeholders as well?
How can we do it? That's always the difficult thing. Yeah. But I think the thing is, the people we're talking to about tourism, and I include Professor Amran Hamza at UTM, who's an acknowledged specialist in this area. He's an IUCN member on sustainable tourism. So, you know, he knows the subject. And he's one of the people who's saying mass tourism is over. People are looking for new tourism products. Okay. So we don't actually have to do anything because the tourism market has changed. What we have to do is be responsive to it. And if the market is saying, we don't want mass tourism, we've got to say, okay, we need to move away from that market. Our tourism operators need to move away from that mass tourism, which is kind of, you know, it's not very personalized. It's just lots and lots of people. And you don't, you know, but whereas small scale ecotourism gives you a chance to get to know the people, you spend a little bit more time with them, probably. Mm-hmm. You can offer them a wider range of services. Tierman, for example, there's no terrestrial tourism. It's all about the coral reefs. Well, Tierman has endemic species. It's got intact rainforests. How about taking people to see that as well as the coral reefs? So it gives us an opportunity to cater to these different people who want a different experience. They want small accommodation, small numbers of people. They want an authentic experience. They want to see some real natural nature. Tierman's a shoo-in for that. It's got everything.
So it's about, you know, rethinking, I guess, all business models as such, right? I mean, obviously the thought is, okay, this is a popular place. Let's just build and build and build until it becomes unsustainable. And I think, you know, we've seen this happen in other countries as well. There are some regional comparisons, you know, of the impact of unmanaged tourism growth. Maybe you could give us some examples of that.
Well, I think the best one was when the Philippines decided to close Boracay last year.
That's right.
This is 6 months closed. Thousands and thousands of jobs were lost. It's a very busy place because the sea was toxic, basically. There's a lot of problems with sewage pollution and other types of pollution in the water. That's one example. Maya Bay in Thailand, where they filmed that movie, The Beach, that was closed. Which is closed to too many tourists, too much damage to the ecosystems. Koh Samui, which I visited, 25 years ago, had an airport built, and I'm told by scientists in Thailand that the result slowly over time was encroaching resort development and the eventual death of all of the shallow water ecosystems, i.e. the coral reefs. So you're building tourism facilities for tourists to come and see these beautiful things that you have, and in the process you end up destroying them. It's not a real sensible approach. So there are numerous examples locally of how tourism gets out of control. And this is an opportunity now, because like I said, the important thing is it's not about what we think tourists should be doing. It's about what tourists are telling us they want. And according to the experts, tourists are saying, we want unspoiled places, we want small groups, we want a variety of experiences. Okay, so that is not a Langkawi, where, you know, you have big resorts and you just do that one thing. It needs to be much more responsive. And as you said, we can rebuild, we can restart our tourism industry to say, okay, this is what people want. So where do we send them to? And it, you know, it perhaps gives us an opportunity to broaden the number of places we send people to. So instead of just Tiermann, we can say, well, there's all these islands in Johor as well. So we can involve them more in tourism and start to spread the load a little bit.
Yeah, I think if there's one thing that this pandemic has, one message that has been very strong, you know, from this pandemic is that if we don't learn some lessons from it and, you know, use those lessons to build back better post-pandemic, you know, then we are in really, really deep trouble. So what are your hopes moving forward? As you said, you know, we're living in a new world. Even tourist interests have changed. What do you hope will be the future of tourism in islands in Malaysia?
I hope we can move to a smaller tourism industry. Yeah, okay, there's going to be economic pain. Some jobs will be lost. But if you're moving to an to a different type of product, then there will be new jobs available, you know, terrestrial guides instead of just marine guides, for example. Mm. With higher levels of customer service, you'll need to employ more people in a given resort, for example. So some of those jobs can probably be saved. But it's like you said, it's restarting the whole thing. It's building back better. The mass tourism market is gone. So we have to respond to that if we're going to be successful. Other countries, Philippines has got more islands than we have. Indonesia's got many, many more islands than we have. Perhaps even more unspoiled than us. Parts of eastern Indonesia are right off the beaten track. So if somebody's looking for an authentic experience, they're going to go there. That is what we're competing with now. And the thing is that now there's no mass market, or we're told there's not going to be a mass market, we've got to be able to provide services to those niche tourism travelers. And at the moment, I'm not sure that we're set up for it. So in order for our tourism industry to recover, we have got to refocus on the new needs of these new emerging sectors. And hopefully it will be smaller scale and it will be less impactful to the environment.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for joining us today, Julian. I've been speaking to Julian Hai, the General Manager of ReefCheck Malaysia, and we were discussing a paper that ReefCheck Malaysia has just released, which is titled Tioman as a Sustainable Tourism Destination. And I guess, you know, the message clear across, you know, the world as well. And with regard to this matter, we need to build back better and we need to rethink the way we were doing things before. And if you'd like to find out more information about ReefCheck Malaysia, just head to their website at reefcheck.org.my, and I'm sure you guys are on all the social media platforms as well.
We are. I don't know how it all works, but apparently we are.
All right. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.